What are you going to leave for us, you people in your big cars, spewing pollution into the air? You people with heavy feet, trampling down the wilderness. You people who peer into the back seats of our cars, hours after you come out of the back doors of your motels.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. My name is Scott Johnson. It is our final Sacktober episode of the show and roughly our 10-year anniversary. 2 days shy.
Woohoo!
Yep. Happy anniversary, guys. 10 years of FilmSack. How do you feel? Give me a feel.
Roughly.
Yeah. It feels great.
Yeah.
It feels great.
It feels pretty good.
They're all going to laugh at us.
Yeah, they're all,
I hope.
2009.
Nobody's gonna laugh at us.
2009, October 29th of that year was our very first episode where we covered the film Krull, and here we are, lo, these 10 years later, one full decade.
Isn't it time for a reboot with Krull with Jason Momoa? Isn't that? Am I feeling that?
he is who you call, right? For those action remakes.
Oh, is he our guy now? I didn't realize. Is he our remake?
Oh, yeah. Okay. He's doing everything. He's doing some kind of original series on Apple TV or something, too. Yeah. He's all over the place.
You get Avatar guy. You get...
wait a minute. Sam Worthington? You think him?
Sam Worthington is your star in your Krull. Nope. In your Krull.
It needs to be John Cena, and that's the final word.
All right, fine. I'll take John Cena.
I thought
Cena.
He moved on to comedies, like with the...
And that's why it's perfect.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
Firemen get a little lady.
Firemen get a lady comedy. There you go. He's always a fireman, doesn't it?
Yeah, isn't that the current name of the movie he's in?
Yeah.
Three firemen and a little lady.
Yep. That's the one.
Yep. We'll sack that in another 10 years.
Big man has to take care of little kids.
Or when it comes to streaming in 4 weeks.
Yeah, good point. Hey, check it out, everybody. It's me, Scott Johnson, also joining me today. Brian, we like to start our movies with all the nudity done away.
Oh, yeah. Slow-mo pan across all that things. I don't know how I feel about it. Okay. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Welcome to hell, Carrie. We've been expecting you. Hopefully you took notice of all the graffiti signs we've been leaving around town for the last couple of weeks to prepare you. Now come on in and burn a while. I'm kidding. This is hell. You burn forever. Okay, so let's see. Here is your first turd in hell ration. Just go ahead and eat that one up and get a taste of what to expect. Oh, don't worry. We call it a ration, but really there's just an endless supply of shit down here. Up next is the sign-up sheet for the Devil's Dance. You may know it back on Earth as The Prom. This year's theme is Bring Your Mom to Prom. And speak of the devil, there's your mom now trying to save Tommy from eternal damnation. You're too late, Margaret. Now get back in your prayer pantry and pray to scary Jesus until the devil dance. Oh, hell, I see Billy is over at the Lake of Fire smashing hogs with a sledgehammer. Well, Carrie, we'll just have to finish this up later. Hey, Billy, stop it. Stop enjoying yourself. This is hell for Pete's sake. At least act like you're miserable. Can't hide from me, Billy. I can see your stupid silhouette.
What a weird moron thing to pull. Yeah, his dumb silhouette behind the stairs.
Right.
What a weird thing that was.
They'll never see me. Did you enjoy the foreshadowing graffiti that kept telling you what was going to happen at the end of the movie?
Kind
of.
Yeah. Mm. Awful lot of pigs, too, everywhere. Mm-hmm. Also with us, Randy, I can see his dirty pillows, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian.
Randy.
Wow, I don't know why that caught me.
Well, you know, it's your dirty pillows.
You know? Hold on. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
All right. Okay. All right.
Aloha. Let me just.
Composure.
What just happened?
I don't know, but they're all gonna laugh at you.
I know. Okay. All right. Okay. Did I ever tell you boys about the time I had a very first successful business?
No.
My very first.
Number one.
No.
Maybe it was my second or third venture, you know. Anyway, event planning. Event planners take your money and then spend about half of it on your event while pocketing the rest. And you too can pull off a memorable, and I mean extremely memorable, high school prom every time if you follow my three easy rules. Number one, let the kids do everything. Teenagers are amazing decorators who are known for showing up and working long hours on a project without getting distracted. Number two, let the kids do everything. Your job as adults is to be guests at the prom party. You'll mingle with the kids as naturally as adults and teenagers always do. Number three, let the kids do everything. The less you know about what a bunch of kids are doing up in them rafters over the stage, the better the party is gonna be. Yeehaw! Red light inside, everyone died.
Was the red light? Oh, we'll get to that. I got a question about that red light. It's going to be, I have questions. Anyway, also with us finally, Brian, he sends more mixed signals than Travolta's girlfriend in the car, Ibit.
Well, I thought she sent one pretty steady signal. Yeah. Hey, Courtney, I sure am glad you agreed to go to prom with me. And my gosh, you look great. Oh, hold on. They're about to announce the king and queen of prom. Wow, it's Tommy and Carrie White. That's crazy. Look at them up on stage. Oh my God, I can totally see why we're clapping. Okay. Oh, still clapping? All right. It seems like an awfully long time to just keep applauding the two of them on stage. But I guess if you know that's what we're all doing, then you know I'll do it too. Okay, so still clapping? Okay. Hey, you ever wonder why a bunch of the kids at this school look like they're in their mid to late 20s? Especially that quote-unquote girl with the big old Jesse Raphael glasses. She looks like she's 35.
Yeah.
Still clapping? Okay. Hey, what's that girl doing there with the rope? I said rope.
The rope.
The rope. Oh, we're stopping clapping now? Oh, good. My hands were getting sore. I'm sure sore hands are about the worst thing that's going to happen to me tonight, right? Can you smell smoke?
Right? That smoke?
Oh, my gosh. They did clap a long time.
They clapped for a long time with no reason to sit there and keep clapping.
Yeah, and does anyone in Carrie almost, I was almost waiting for the blood. I'm like, please, come on. She's just standing there going, thank you. Thank you. No one does that.
No.
Like she won the Academy Award or something for best
actress
already.
You really like me.
That would come later for Coal Miner's Daughter. Yeah. That's when she'd win.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I'd forgotten, by the way, I just started watching at the behest of so many people, started watching, what's it called? The Stephen King Hulu, anthology.
Oh, yeah.
Castle Rock. I started watching Castle Rock and I'm on season one still cause I missed it. I know season two just landed, but anyway, it's fun to see all of these actors from previous King adaptations show up. Mm. And I forgot she's in this. She's straight up. Sissy Spacek is totally in that first season as a character that's, you know, all throughout the thing. And Tim Robbins is in the second season from your Shawshank Redemption there.
And I know you like that Lizzie Kaplan.
She's
not in the first season, is she?
No, so season two, as far as I know.
Okay.
I think it's all separate. I mean, they're completely separate characters and stories each season. It's
gotcha. Okay. Right.
It's like Fargo or whatever.
Self-contained, like an American Horror Story. Fargo, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's fun to see her in there because I just watched that. And then, boom, here we are watching Carrie. So that's the film, 1976's Carrie. With your Sissy Spacek and your, I had no idea John Travolta was anywhere near this thing.
I forgot John Travolta
totally
was in
forgot.
That thing. Yeah.
Totally forgot.
Didn't know. Had no idea.
Boy, he didn't mind slapping his girlfriend around.
Yeah.
A lot of slapping in this movie.
And mostly in her direction.
Mostly her getting slapped. Yeah.
Right.
So how do you guys explain how is it possible I never saw this? I've never seen it.
You've never seen Carrie?
Wow. Nope.
Okay. So.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
I think the obvious reason is this movie starts with hard R nudity.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine in the, I don't know, the first 15 years after it came out that it was even available for you, Scott Johnson, to see.
Well, I'm sure it was. It was in like video stores and stuff. I just never, the whole
first part of the movie would have been under a towel for you.
Yeah.
Right. I think I saw this on TV the first time I ever saw it years ago.
Yes. I never saw this in the theaters. I mean, we were like
5 or 6 years old then or something.
Yeah.
It's weird to think of a TV version of this because you'd have to cut a lot. Like there's only really specific little bits. There's a lot of just out of frame stuff, you know, like the head in the car is just out of frame. The John Travolta massacring a pig is just out of frame, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But then like, how do you get the real big climax of the movie if you cut the mom being impaled? Like that's just, you know what I'm saying? Like how do you demonstrate what's happening?
I actually think that I saw, boy, back in the 80s, it seemed like there were these movies that came out that were collections of the endings of other movies. Like it was like a tribute to horror films. And so you basically get like these clips of slasher films, and then you'd get this clip
before
of Carrie.
YouTube, people.
Yeah. This is before YouTube. But I remember that this being, and I don't remember if it was necessarily in theaters. No, there was one that was in theaters, and it was like Rolling or Something in the Aisles.
Yeah, and these were all popular around the same time as those Faces of Death things were hitting.
Kind of, yeah. It was like KTEL's greatest hits, but with horror films.
Yeah.
And it was a theater thing. And there was another one that was like that, too. And I remember I saw that the prom scene of Carrie before I saw anything else. And I think it was years later that we just finally rented the DVD and watched it. Yeah.
Right.
Also, Scott, this is apparently one of the first like major examples of the trailer spoils the film.
Oh yeah, a little bit.
And people were really, not just a little bit, people like noted that they didn't go see this movie because the trailer had all of, and I watched the trailer, I'm like, oh wow, the trailer shows you the entire end of every character, including John Travolta.
Yeah.
Like they literally show you John Travolta in his first major role, and then boom, his car explodes. Like what?
Yeah. Not only that, the poster and the cover, the cover art is the end scene as, and, you know, juxtaposed to her all clean and pretty and, you know, not covered in blood. That in a way is a weird spoiler. And also it's one thing to spoil a movie through its, you know, marketing material, its trailers and stuff like that. But it's a whole nother thing to have this movie. I mean, the movie is not long, but it goes a long time before we get there. It is a long time before any of this starts to happen. There's only hints of her kinetic abilities. She only knocks over a few things here and there, shuts the windows on her mom, you know, dumb stuff like that.
It's funny you say that because I feel like, again, it's been years since I've seen this, but I feel like, oh my God, we're already setting up the prom stuff. Like it feels like
that's how I feel
in the movie before we're already setting up the prom. And I felt like I could have sworn it was like, oh, you know, we had several weeks of classroom hazing and teasing and picking on her and stuff like that before we even mentioned prom. Mm. But
that's just the book is always better trope, right? Like book,
because I never read the book. I just think that I added true, so much stuff. Maybe true, but. But I just remember, I thought I remember there being so much more exposition.
I thought, really quickly,
Terror in the Aisles was the movie I was thinking of, 1984 documentary hosted by Donald Pleasance and Nancy Allen from Carrie here.
From RoboCop. RoboCop.
But it was basically like, it was a string of horror clips from 30, I'm looking at a list of like 30 in here, all the Halloween movies up to that point, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Birds, Frogs, Jaws 1 and 2, American Werewolf in London.
We've seen a lot of these. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. But they just show you like, it's almost like, you can skip seeing the whole movie. Here's the best part. Here's the prom scene from Carrie.
An odd thing to do. Like, I understand, I guess we do that with YouTube compilations now, right?
Well, that's exactly what YouTube has turned into. Right.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, it's written, it's presented as a documentary, although it's not really like there's any analysis going along with it where it says, you know, well, now let's take a look at where the horror film is transformative of the blah, 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 and the such and such.
The blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Donald Pleasance. I haven't heard that name in a while.
But Brian, I think the Halloween guy, wasn't he? The doctor in Halloween?
Yeah. Right? Yes. Yeah. I think you're right about it. He's been on this show before, but I don't remember in what context.
Yeah.
Sorry, Randy.
So, Brian, I think the best example of the book takes more time to explain things, because of course it does. It's a book, is in Carrie getting her powers at the very beginning of the film. At the very beginning of this movie, Carrie just suddenly develops. Like, it's just like, oh, and demon inside. Like, you don't have any kind of explanation. You don't have any kind of her thoughts about it, right? Because she's sullen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the book, you get to find out everything about that, right? Like, you can actually be in her head and know what she's thinking in a book, right?
Yeah, I think De Palma did a good job at that, because he drew parallels between her burgeoning womanhood and her talents,
her powers developing.
Yeah, her powers. Yeah. So I thought it was actually a real interesting parallel that I don't know if they're really approached.
But if you didn't read the book, you might look at this and go, wait, so do all women get these crazy? You know what I'm saying? Like, this movie.
I think sex ed covered that, Randy, but yeah, the book too, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. Like, I never read the book either. It's one of the only King books I haven't read. It's his first book, and it's also his first adaptation to film. He was apparently very pleased with it. I guess the ending's different, but he likes the film ending. Like, there's a lot of talk about he really thought this turned out good. I mean,
I'm curious about that ending too, about what the book ending is. So
yeah, Randy, do you know what the book ending is?
It's been since the 80s since I read Carrie. I cannot recall much of any comparatives.
Yeah.
Randy, have you read it recently?
I haven't read it recently.
Yeah. Does anyone remember how it ends? Like, what was the,
do they all laugh?
This is a really typical Stephen King story where he has the main character get revenge on her torturer or torturers, as it were. But the torturers are all also fighting against what they think is, you know, evil, which is in her. Mm-hmm. And no one wins, right? Everybody loses. Right. That's a classic Stephen King thing. Mm-hmm. And my regret is that we held it up as our sort of Halloween film this year, because it's really not that scary. Like, it's nothing like some of the actually scary horror movies we've seen. And it's a lot more of, you know, a coach talking to a 27-year-old pretending to be a teenager about her feelings, you know?
No, you're right about that. But I thought about this the whole time, because it's on some list of, like, it's like 16th on the list of scariest movies ever from some reputable list. And I know, I thought that's a little high.
I watched it with I watched it with a couple of 14-year-olds, and they were scared shitless.
Well, okay. When I got to the prom, and then the tension began with the bucket. Mm-hmm. So during the part that was ridiculously long clapping, this, by the way, is also a thing that that director
Brian De Palma
does in his movies. In fact, this scene is basically the scene from The Untouchables, his greatest film, in my opinion.
The baby carriage going slowly down the stairs.
Yep.
And
everything gets slow. Everything goes slow motion. The tension is high. The music highlights it. Like, he's very good at that. And to me, that really jumped out. And from then till the end of the school burn, it was really harrowing. Like, I was, and not just the part after that she went nuts and started killing everybody. What got me was the tension leading up to it. And I knew the whole time what's going to happen, but it didn't matter. Sure. Like, the tension was built so well. So I have to say, props. I don't even think Brian De Palma is a little overrated. Of that group of dudes who all hung out in the 70s, freaking him and Spielberg and Lucas and Scorsese and all those guys who are all pals, he's the one whose movies hit me the least, with just a few exceptions. He's not the constant hit maker that these other guys are. Well, but once in a while, he'll do a thing, and you'll go, oh, dude, that is a scene.
That wasn't his, like, life calling, though, right? Like, that's something he just enjoyed doing, making movies, right? Because he's like, directs, like, occasionally. He's like, I think I'll direct every fifth year.
Well,
De Palma was a big deal for a while. You know, he made Scarface. He made The Untouchables.
Yeah, he made the first Mission Impossible. Carlito's Way. That's a great movie, Carlito's Way.
But you know, he got older and slowed down. Like the guy just doesn't make, you know, movies anymore.
He made Scarface. He made like he's known for these, like, there are movies where you're like, oh yeah, that dude, he does stuff. He directed 43 films. He's got a new one in the makes. Oh, he's not making Predator, is he? Hold on.
It's been said. He's been named.
Really?
That doesn't mean anything's going to actually happen.
Okay.
He's been named.
Because it says announced, but not in production, so we'll see what that means. Yeah. But he's finishing some movie named called Domino and then Sweet Vengeance. But previous to this, the one you probably know is 2006's The Black Dahlia, I guess.
Right. Dahlia.
Dahlia. Did I say Dahlia? I meant Dahlia. Mission to Mars. Remember that piece of shit in 2000?
Yeah.
That was a bad movie. Hey,
you gotta give De Palma some props for Gary, because this is his first real big production, and he only had $1.8 million budget to work with, and that was mostly in cleaning up Travolta after his Pixar. But it was interesting. I thought it was pretty interesting what he did here. And some things that I almost feel like, some movies I'll watch something, especially like the opening shower scene with the ladies in the locker room. And at first I was like, oh, this is so gratuitous. We don't need this slow motion pan across doing all this stuff. But then when the reveal of her, you know, of Carrie actually having her period, I kind of got it. I'm like, oh, okay, so this wasn't really necessarily gratuitous. It was this emotion that he was creating with the music and the slow motion video and the vision. And then it, you know, this reveal and her thinking that she's, you know, she's dying. I actually thought it kind of worked there, even though at first I was like, that's just too gratuitous.
Well, yeah, like, he's good at that stuff. And he's also, I don't think all the dialogue in between this, you know, like lots of in between dialogue between characters is all that great. It's all kind of
right.
Stiff and lame. And it was a thing of its time too. The music's really shitty and stuff like that, but.
Oh man, the music is distractingly shitty. Yeah. I mean, it's like you're watching when they're doing calisthenics. It's almost like porn music in the background playing with the
it absolutely
jumps around.
Synthesizer.
It jumps around a lot.
How about this one?
This is what happens.
Oh, yeah.
What's the music budget? $5.
$5.
Just like a porn.
Yeah.
Pretty much. By the way, we talk about directors who cut their teeth on MTV. Brian De Palma, obviously, you know, did movies before his one music video that he directed. But in his music video, Bruce Springsteen pulls a then young Courtney Cox up onto the stage to do Dancing in the Dark.
Oh,
the Carlton dance.
Nice.
The Carlton dance.
As it would be evolved into.
Wait a minute. Does she do does the Carlton dance in that video?
Well, she originates.
Very
She originates the Carlton dance, according to Alfonso.
Really?
He says that it is a mixture of that dance that Courtney Cox did and several other things. But
I had no idea where that comes from.
They should call the Courtney Olton dance.
Or just call it the Courtney.
Yeah, the Courtney doing the Courtney. That's amazing.
Look at that. Yeah, Courtney Cox is the mom of the Carlton dance.
Wow. That's crazy.
Somebody should recut that video with Alfonso Ribeiro up there dancing on stage.
Oh, that'd be great. I'm sure they have. Yeah.
Here's
right?
Alfonso's. This is Alfonso's mom when he said he was going to do that on TV.
They're all going to laugh at you.
Oh, I know.
And
I agree.
Right. And they were right.
Tell you, Brian De Palma is the dad of the orbital shot. I should say the unnecessary orbital shot.
Yeah.
And my long memory of this film is always going to be the camera suddenly lifting up and showing me the soon-to-be bald spots on all of these aging actors' heads.
The ones playing teenagers.
Right. Yeah, for no reason. I like this whole movie. Just this whole movie.
I got a lot of hair.
I found myself bracing for. I'm surprised he didn't do it in the locker room. Like seriously, like I guess he wanted to keep the camera low so we could see all that bush.
He did, because that was our eventual endpoint, was at Carrie's waist, right? So that was where it was going.
Yeah,
they're baby makers. It was a statement.
Yeah,
it's just weird. I never knew Brian De Palma overused this one thing, and it like this movie. It just all the time. You're just like looking at a scene and like, oh wait, why are we lifting off? Why are we going to heaven? What's happening? But now we're looking down on the same scene. Why are we doing this? Why?
I thought Billy
there was a little Batman in there, right? The '60s Batman. That was the first time I ever noticed.
A little bit.
This, you know, adjustment of camera where cameras are angled and they do all these weird.
That's because they found freaking cranes and figured out how cherry to pickers. Attach stuff
yeah,
to them.
Figured out how to use all that stuff.
I think you're right. And
It makes you feel disoriented though. So that's a good thing in a horror movie.
It's true. But when Billy and her are dancing, I actually really thought that was awesome. That was really sweet. And the camera zipping around, so but sweet. It really held up. Like that did not feel like a thing out of time to me. It felt like a legitimate thing. And I think, you know, William Catt.
What happened to William Catt? Because that performance, I thought the performance was amazing.
Okay.
It was pretty good.
Answer your question. Believe it or not, he's walking on air.
Right.
Listen, we just saw him in House. What more do you need from William Catt?
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
born in 51, that would have made him how old here? 24?
20, yeah, he's in his 20s.
Yeah. They were all in their 20s, for Edie McClurg, who was like,
right?
Oh, man.
I actually, you know what? I'm not going to complain too much about that because, Travolta looks younger than all of his co-stars, but they did cast people that all looked about the same age to play teenagers. And the mistake would have been if they put any actual teenager in amongst them, then that would have made Sissy Spacek look like she was 50.
Yeah.
And so they just didn't.
I think she actually the two people that struck me as the most realistically young. For the roles were actually Sissy Spacek and Nancy Allen. What's her name? Can't remember her name.
Oh, Amy Irving.
Amy Irving. I thought she looked really great.
Male.
She looked like a senior to me. But here's the thing: none of those movies or those TV shows at the time ever hired actual kids for it. It was always, in fact, Travolta was that same year was hitting it big on Welcome Back, Cotter, which was supposed to be high school, which is totally unbelievable.
He looked younger, and he was. He was 3, 4, 5 years younger than Sissy Spacek, John Travolta.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But he was playing the older, right? He was playing out of school, right?
When right, right.
Oh, I thought he was just... Oh, you're right.
He,
no, no, no.
He graduated or left school or whatever, but yeah, he wasn't in school anymore.
He keeps getting older, and they keep staying the same.
Yeah,
he does not know how to drink a beer to save his life.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, why was he driving in the slow lane? Because everybody was past him. It was just I was waiting for grandma to come by.
Well, it's not like he's driving Grease Lightning.
I've been waiting. I couldn't wait to ask you guys this question. This is a thing. This is a thing that I am telling you the truth. This is not a gag. Okay. In actual reality, when I was a teenager, I lived in a town of, let's say, 20 to 25,000 people.
Okay.
And there was a main street through town. And it was about 10 blocks long. And all of the main businesses were on that street, and then the little side streets that came off of it for one block, right?
Right.
When I was a teenager, everyone who had access to a car of a certain age, like let's say everyone 14 to 20, on Friday nights was driving the car down that street.
Of course. Sure.
And cruising. It was like a parade of kids in cars. You'd go down to the very end of the street and turn around and come back.
That's right.
And I sometimes tell people this and they are just like, no, that never happened. And I'm like, I lived it. I remember everybody being out doing that. And so whenever I see it kind of sort of depicted in a movie, I'm like, yeah, that's realistic.
Yeah, I did it.
But I like
totally did
you,
it.
So, okay. So you believe in that?
No, I like, not only believe in it. We used to go down there every weekend and we called it Dragging Main, and it was Main Street downtown. And we would go down there in the car, roll down the windows, and everybody would drive up and down Main Street over and over and yell at girls, and girls would yell back. Yeah. And
now we were more 80s. Like I was more like late 80s whenever I was in my teenage years. So we cruised the mall. So we like just looped around the mall.
In the car?
Oh, you so looped like around the mall? This one did go right by the mall, the one we had. So we had the one up in Longmont, and then they started putting up signs saying no loitering traffic, basically, no cruising. And then everybody moved down to Westminster, which is actually a lot closer to Arvada, and they'd go back and forth. And that one was right by the Westminster Mall. But it was still just back and forth along 88th Avenue.
Yeah, it's a thing. Everybody did it.
Yeah, as long as teenagers has had cars, I think they've been cruising.
I don't know
because I don't think Nick doesn't know about cruising, does he?
Sure, him and his friends did this. His sister Taylor and her friends did it. I think it's a thing. And by the way, before anyone emails me from who's local because I screwed it up, it was state, not Maine. It was State Street.
Oh, geez, Scott.
Yeah.
Oh,
but now that I think about it,
you're making all of these names up. We all know that the streets in Salt Lake City are 1,694.3. And
yeah, it is a lot of weird numbers like that. But we do have a Main Street, and we have State Street. And on State Street, there's also a mall. So maybe that was part of it. But it was always late at night. We were doing this at like 11. You know?
Oh yeah. I mean, we didn't have let's face it. I mean, it's different times now because we didn't have the internet. You couldn't swipe right. You would have to drive right. That's what you did. That's how you met people.
I think it still happens. I think people are still, there's still a drive to like,
I don't know. I'd be curious to see. I'll have to ask Tristan if they do cruising still.
Yeah. I'm sure your son wants to get that question.
Yeah.
Hey son,
whatever.
I'm really old and out of touch.
While he's back living in my house, he's open to interrogation. You don't want to get interrogated. Move out.
Dad.
Don't live here. You don't want questions. Don't live here.
Exactly. Yes.
That's fantastic.
Whatever, Tristan, get in the prayer pantry and say some prayers to the scary Jesus.
Exactly.
Do it.
Oh yeah. Which apparently is not a scary Jesus. I was curious about that too.
Right.
The trivia says that it's actually Sebastian, I think.
Yeah, because he's not really, seems funny when you say scary Jesus, but yeah, he's not really crucified like Christ was. And of course, at the end, she does the same pose as him with the
because that's what I wonder. What's with all the arrows in Jesus? Like, that's not normal. It's obviously not him, but what's with the glowing eyes? That's a weird deal.
Yeah, Sebastian actually had glowing those glowing eyes until Jesus made him a pair of ruby quartz glasses to kind of keep his powers in check.
Well, that's funny.
Yeah, that was most of what she was saying was like a lot of it was fictitious. Like, you know, she wasn't actually quoting scripture,
actual scripture, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, like what is that?
She's making a lot of stuff up. Also, the somebody on Twitter, I put up a picture of that all stabbed up looking Jesus guy, and somebody on Twitter said, "Wait, Jesus was a Goa'uld from Stargate? He looks like one of those Stargate with those stupid eyes, man. It's so weird.
Perhaps,
yeah. But I assume those were plugged in, right? Like there was like a lamp in there.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I
think it's just white.
Weird.
I find I
think it actually really glowed.
You might be right.
I find it really interesting that the actress who played the mom was Piper Laurie, and she didn't think her character was close enough to realistic to work. Mm. Like she was constantly pushing back on Brian De Palma's depiction of this mom, and I didn't know that watching the movie. I was just watching the movie, and I thought, oh wow, that's so realistic. Like I knew kids who were tortured by their parents because
absolutely.
They had drank too much of the juice. And like I, you know, so like I actually saw this as, man, that's so scary because it's real. And then I'm reading and the, you know, Piper Laurie, the actress, is like apparently bursting out into laughter as soon as they call take because, you know, like, whoa, that's weird. Like, how did
I'm
this?
I'm so going to laugh at this. I'm so going to laugh at this.
How did you prepare?
right.
Like her vocalization is nuts. Like. You're right.
Yeah.
Like the trivia is full of the stuff about her and her portrayal, and she arguing with the director about whether this is the right thing or not, and you'd have to try to explain to her that she needs to be so over the top and all that. But man, the voice and the way she just chose to like have her,
she nailed it.
The way she would enunciate things is so iconic. And again, this is my first time seeing this, but now I get it. I get why she's such a trope and such a meme.
Right.
You know,
there was a lot of intentional overacting in this film. I mean, all the way from Travolta drinking his beer, you know, you can't just drink a beer in a car when you're an actor. You have to like splash it on your face so that people really get that you're drinking a beer.
So do you think it's intentional overacting? I mean, I know Piper Laurie, he was directing her to kind of overact, but I think it's just because a lot of these people were just in their first roles and they were like figuring out how to act. And
I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I think it was a little bit of both. I think it was just inexperience all across the board.
She's,
but they did a great job.
She's was born in 32, still with us, 87 years old, still rocking it.
Oh, Piper Laurie?
Yeah. And
The only other Piper Laurie thing that I'm familiar with, the only other thing I see her, have seen her in is Twin Peaks. Like she was a regular. She was the woman who owned the mill and was like a powerful.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Powerful character in Twin Peaks and died, I think, in a fire in the windmill or something.
Yeah.
But other than that, that is all I know about Piper Laurie. And apparently she's, you know, done a lot of stuff, just not the kind of stuff that I've watched.
Well, check this out. Here's some trivia that you'll like. In fact, I wrote here, this one's for Ibbot. Piper Laurie appeared in Twin Peaks, like you said, 1990. Nancy Allen appeared in RoboCop in 87, opposite future Twin Peaks cast members Ray Wise and Miguel Ferrer and Dan O'Hurley. So look at all the...
Wow.
Look at all the connections.
Connections. Now,
I think Amy Irving, who played Sue, and William Cat, who played Tommy, I think they brought a better performance than just about anybody else.
I think so too, especially Amy Irving. Yeah, I take that back. Both of them did, right? Like the whole believability that she, you're questioning her motives when she's telling Tommy to ask Carrie out to the prom, Carrie. And you're thinking, oh yeah, all right, they're, you know, going to do this whole thing, and then you see her reaction when she sees what's going on, and it's like, oh wow, she had no idea. That's crazy.
Doesn't it seem like it's a good little stuff. Crazy that you're saying this about? That I even agree with you about William Cat, because in everything else William Cat's in, I think he's kind of terrible. He's great in this. I don't know if it was just he was relaxed, he was young, he didn't care. Maybe it's direction. Also, I don't know what it is, but he really sold it. It was great.
Yeah. And also they let the character sort of follow his abilities more. Like in the book, he's, you know, he's a horrible person who's tricking this, a hero. I don't think she's a hero. I don't know what she is really, but anyway, he's a horrible person who's committing a horrible, horrible prank. And, you know, so you get to constantly see that he is, thinking, he's having to think through what he's doing in order to trick her. Mm-hmm. And in the movie, you see sort of the opposite. It almost looks like someone who starts out looking forward to pranking her and falls in love with her, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Kind of. At least feels bad for the way that she's been treated, and is like, oh, you know, kind of, you're actually really cool, and you know,
he was never in anything in the movie, right? He was just right. Amy and William Cat were both just doing, they were trying to be nice, which was weird, but still,
it was a hard thing, you know. Initially, is like, okay, well, they're all in this clique with Nancy Allen's character and Tomboy, who. I guess you have to know she's a tomboy because you only wear sports clothes.
Mm-hmm. And she wears that hat even to the prom.
Norma.
Shut up, Norma.
By the way, Norma, we saw in that actress in Stripes is one of the girlfriends of Bill Murray and.
What's his face? Is it the one where they're making out inside of a tool chest or whatever the hell it is?
Right, exactly. A chest at the end of the bed. I think it was the other one. She was the one who was getting the Aunt Jemima treatment from Bill Murray in the kitchen with the spatula on the stove.
Oh, right. Okay.
Do you ever have the Aunt Jemima treatment?
I'd never thought of it that way, but yeah.
By the way, William Cat, continues to occasionally appear in things. And if you're listening, Mr. Cat, I just want to let you know, your goatee is like over a decade expired. It is so out of date.
Oh,
just
more
shave
than that.
Shave that.
What? You can wear your goatee, Cat.
Yeah. He looks so bad. He looks like he's constantly scrapping to be the star in a Kenny Rogers documentary. you need to lose that, buddy.
Look at him though. He's like
I know, he looks like he's giving a TED talk.
Yeah.
I like it. I do too.
Like,
his IMDb profile.
What's he in lately? Seriously. Let's see.
Kenny Rogers. He's trying out every day for Kenny Rogers documentary.
Oh, I want to know what this is. He's in some TV show called The Thundermans.
Oh, you didn't watch that? But you want to watch The Thundermans?
No.
It is it's kind of a kids show. Is it on Disney? I believe it is.
I love when we bring up, you know, every episode, we bring up some weird, obscure things. Oh, you don't watch?
It's a Nickelodeon TV series.
Okay, Nickelodeon. Interesting.
You don't watch Frankfurter Town? What? Do you,
you don't have TV constantly on? What? You don't watch Riverdale on Netflix? Right. I mean, come on.
And then we find out not only does Brian watch it, he owns the DVD box set or the Blu-ray box set with the bonus content.
I actually feel like I'm constantly lobbying you guys to watch things, and so I'm glad when Dunaway also gets that rap. I literally had an IRL friend come up to me this week and say, you've watched Peaky Blinders, right?
Of course.
And I'm like, I was having deja vu because I feel like I said that on this podcast to you guys.
I think you did.
And it was, right. Yeah, it's so weird.
I think you literally did say that here. I remember it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, because I think we were all talking, somebody was saying there was a new season coming, and I was like, I'm way behind, like three seasons, and We've had this conversation. If it wasn't here, it was some other show. I don't remember, but it had to have been here.
So apparently I'm the one who is constantly lobbying you to watch things on HBO and Amazon Prime. Dunaway is bringing the Nickelodeon and MTV stuff.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, but I don't ask anybody to watch all the crap I watch. I just kind of like watch it, and then when it comes up, I'm like, I can't believe you guys haven't seen it.
Yeah,
how come you haven't heard of this?
Right.
I don't mind it.
You guys don't constantly TV surf like I do? Jeez.
Here's some fun trivia, by the way. Okay, so apparently this is popular with certain directors. Martin Scorsese, who was friends with De Palma, saw the movie 3 times when it was released in theaters. And according to this, Quentin Tarantino said it is one of his favorite movies of all time. And there's some feet.
There's a lot of feet in that opening scene. A lot of feet.
Naked feet.
See the feet.
Yeah.
Naked feet.
He likes those feet.
Pan down.
It's him talking to this movie from 76. Pan down.
She's got her foot up on the bench. All right.
Here's another cool one. It says, while speaking at a book event in Fort Myers, Florida in 2010, Stephen King recalled and told the audience there that he was paid just $2,500 for the movie rights to Carrie. Yeah. Which may have seemed like a pittance, certainly is, but he says he has no regrets. Quote, I was fortunate to have that happen to my very first book. Well, that's a nice way to
put him on the map. I mean, come on.
Yeah, look at him now. My gosh, we're in the Kingverse now. Like we
over 100 TV and movie representations of his work. That is just crazy.
And not just that, but like right now we are in Renaissance time for him. Like there are multiple shows on multiple networks that are doing his thing. There's a Mr. Mercedes series. There's this Castle Rock deal we just talked about. That thing on Shudder.
There's a new Shining sequel coming out.
Oh, right. And that's got incredible early buzz. People are really amped
Doctor
on that.
Sleep. Take a nap.
The other thing was, what's the other thing that he's got that J.J. Abrams joint. Oh, no. The Shudder thing is what I'm thinking of, which is the... we just watched it.
We just watched the
Creepshow. The Creepshow thing.
Creepshow. There you go.
I watched Brandy, one of those, by the way.
Did you watch?
I watched
one of the Shudder Creepshows?
How is it? It's very good. And you know what? I thought it would just be over-the-top, gory version. Like, you know, just... They would just make scary new horror stories. But it really sticks to that vibe of this is weird and these people are overacting and this is kind of insane and
I like
ridiculous. Like, you know, that kind of weird, ridiculous quality, the pulpy quality to those movies. They've nailed it. It's definitely
that. The dollhouse, the Smiths episode was just fantastic.
Yeah, wasn't that good? Oh, my gosh. Mm. Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is, could he be? He's Lord of all media. He's Lord of everything.
Which is funny because in the 90s, when you had like your Maximum Overdrive and late 80s, you know, we were like, all right, well, I guess King's time is done.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. What really? You needed was a generation.
Did y'all guys not have like a, you know, kind of a guilty love for that kind of crap, though? I mean, I love Maximum Overdrive. Randy, you read a lot of the books and stuff and were reading the show.
Of course, that stuff's fun in a dumb kind of retro way, but
no one. You watch Christine for the goofiness of it. You don't watch it for this is fantastic cinema. I need to sit down.
But what happened in the intervening years, I think, is a bunch of people our age who grew up reading Stephen King books religiously and just could not get enough of this stuff. They're the ones now making it, and they have the money and the wherewithal and the tech and the whatnot and the millions of streaming services, so you can actually get your stuff out there. Like, it's the perfect confluence of things.
Here's my test question for people to find out if they really like watching trash, even by Stephen King here. You ever seen The Mangler from 1995?
No.
You haven't seen that? Okay.
No. I don't need to go. All right. I haven't even heard of it. Now tell us all about the Blu-ray box set.
Right. Then I'm the trashiest person here. All right. That's all I wanted to know. I just needed to know.
What is it? Tell me about The Mangler. Is it worth, we should do it on here, it sounds like.
Absolutely. There's this industrial area where there's this big warehouse built industrial place where there's this machine that's called The Mangler. And there's some bad things going on. It's a laundry machine.
It's a laundry folding machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's possessed by a demon, just like your Christine's and that kind of stuff.
Oh, Robert Englund's in it. Interesting.
Oh yeah, Robert Englund's in it.
Yeah. Yep.
So that
old bad guy.
And see, that's right in the middle of the stretch that everybody thought killed Stephen King. So For some reason, he got a deal where they were making a mini series out of some of his longer books every year. Mm-hmm. And he had in 93, The Tommyknockers was on TV. And yes. Then in 94, The Stand that everybody hated was on TV. And then in 95, The Langoliers, which also everybody hated, mm-hmm. was on TV. And at that point, no one knew that Shawshank Redemption was his. Everyone just declared Stephen King was over. They canceled Stephen King in 95. And it's just fascinating that, you know, he managed as a writer to sort of come out of that. Mm-hmm. And you have just the very next year, we start seeing movies like Thinner, which, you know, wasn't as bad. And then there was The Shining on TV, not as bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And he just like somehow works way up.
You know what? I was still hanging out with Stephen King even during the mid 90s.
Yeah, of course you were.
I still like those things. Hey, if you can't love Stephen King at his worst, you know, you can't.
No. This is the thing. We had not caught up to him yet. That's what we needed to do. Right. And now we're doing it.
By the way, the director of The Mangler, I didn't realize this, was Toby Hooper.
Yeah, he did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
He did, yeah. Wow.
And you know what? You know what, Scott? What the example of a thing that makes it okay for Stephen King to be considered good is like the X-Files. The mm-hmm. X-Files comes along and we're all, oh yeah, we kind of like this schlock. And mm-hmm. then, you know, you look back and go, and I guess Stephen King wasn't so bad.
Yeah. No. Like in some ways, a lot of that stuff lifted, you know, from him. Yeah. But no one ever decried the quality of the books or any of that. Oh, I forgot this year It too came out too. Like there's just just constant Stephen King in our faces right now. And if that Dr. Sleep is as good as the early buzz is, I mean that's a banner year.
I love the book, by the way.
There cannot be a person on IMDb who has more projects that are in the works than Stephen King.
Yeah.
Like it's impressive. To IMDb and look at the projects that are in the works where he is credited. It's at least 100 things.
You think Joe Hill's at home right now having breakfast going, damn, bitch, get out my way. I want my stuff to get made now, Dad. Move.
I would say Charlie Booker is actually the one that's like that's got to be suffering the most because, like, how do you come up with something new for Black Mirror at this point?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I don't know, but there's a new novel called Cujo, Canine Unit Joint Operations. So I guess it's a cyborg?
Sounds great. Or is it going to be just
unit?
It's can't wait for Cyborg. I don't know. I have no idea what that is. I'm making that up.
I don't either. I don't know if it's like a cyborg kind of thing or if they're like, if there's a canine unit joint operation where they give the dog the crazies and it goes out. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is. By the way, Travolta got, I just had a note here and I almost skipped it. Travolta got second billing on this behind Sissy Spacek only because it was a bit part and not worthy of that. But it was only because there was this raging TV success he was having, and so they decided last minute to move him up. Yeah, so he got the Cotter bump.
The Cotter bump.
I'll bet you if just days later after this movie, I'll bet you De Palma wishes he had put Travolta in the William Cat role because Travolta was so much more of a draw than William Cat could ever be.
Oh yeah, like the William Cat should have just flipped him. Like
yeah.
But in a way, I'm glad they didn't because I think this is maybe William Cat's best work. I hate to say it, but you did your best work. You peaked at like 24 or whatever you were. And
man, that hair. That hair is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
I used to think it was long in the Greatest American Hero or whatever.
Right.
No.
This is awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
Hey, okay. So in any good horror film, there's also moments of just spontaneous laughter because you got to break up the scary, right? Mm-hmm. The thing that made me laugh and surprised me the most was the kid on the bike who is like hovering
the tree slalom. Hovering.
Yeah, he was doing the tree slalom. Right? Crazy Carrie, and all of a sudden it's like, and then he's like looking back at her like, oh.
Yeah.
According to the trivia, that's Betty Buckley did the voice overdub of that kid. Yeah, so... No. So the teacher, the friendly teacher's Crazy Carrie.
He's also De Palma's nephew, I guess, that kid.
Oh, interesting.
Not good enough to do his own VO, I guess.
But. Right. Yeah. No SAG card for you, kid.
I could have gone with a lot more development around her realizing that she had powers and testing her powers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, other than hanging out really in the library, that felt weak to me. Just like, oh, I learned how to focus my powers by reading books in the library.
Yeah, I don't even know if that they even did a good job of implying that that's, you know, it's almost like the pig blood was the thing that just suddenly it all locked in and she knew what to do. So in a way, the one you guys talked about, the version where her eyes roll back in her head and she almost loses control and it's not really her anymore. I almost prefer that idea because it just is more consistent with her not knowing what the hell's going on. I do like this feeling, though, of being conflicted about this character, because on the one hand, you feel for her and you want her to be treated right and everyone's a piece of shit to her and they can all die. But on the other hand, she's killing everybody, burning down the school, and ends up getting sucked down into hell literally through the house getting folded in on itself. Like, she's not a villain. She's not a hero. I don't know what she is.
She's a victim with inexperience and a thing. And I kept waiting for De Palma to kind of really drive it home and deliver it, because it's like, okay, you have all the power in the world, like being able to create a child. And so how do you handle that new power responsibly? And so it was a real interesting question that never really, really bore any fruit, I suppose.
Yeah. You know, it was weird. I watched this movie last night and earlier in the day, I had breakfast at Denny's. with Nick and my our server, I guess they prefer to be called these days. Her name was Piper, and so I had no idea. Really, I was going to get two Pipers in a day, and I don't think I even know a Piper outside
that's,
of these two.
That's more Piper than anyone needs.
Yeah.
I have an important question.
Was it, when you were done, though, was it time to pay the Piper?
Yeah, I had to time to pay the Piper. Well, except you go pay up front, right, in that place, but that's a little bit different. But
come
still,
on, whatever.
We tipped the Piper.
Play along with the joke.
Time to tip the Piper.
This is important. Piper. Did Denny's used to be good 20 years ago and now it's horrible, or is it me? Did I change?
I think Denny's has never been great, but I think maybe lately they're a little less concerned with presentation than they used to be. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably it. I mean, I think Denny's is adequate. I like the fact that you can go do your Grand Slam and pick the four things that you want and pay a decent price for it, but it's not going to be even come close to the quality of like your family owned breakfasty places around. I think it also depends on the Denny's. I've gone to a Denny's that was really close to where I do my Weight Watcher weigh in, where the eggs were way undercooked and it was horrible. I never went back. But I think that it really does depend on the Denny's.
Yeah, the Denny's we have is just kind of crappy diner food. But the actual location's brand new, and it looks like a diner inside. They went all out to make it look retro, so it doesn't look like one of those things your grandparents took you to for years, the old-style Denny's. And so that helped. Like, it really did help, because it felt like, well, yeah, this is kind of greasy and nasty, but it fits this zone.
The presentation.
They finally made the decor fit the food.
Yeah, kind of. And it's a weird thing, but Randy's not wrong to notice it. It's not great.
I feel like it can't be only me or only this effect also, because I can name places that like I haven't been. I've been living in California for a decade now, right? Mm-hmm. So I go these really long stretches between visits to Whataburger. And every time I go, it's like, wow, it's identical to the way it's always been my entire life. It takes me back to being a child, like in that perfect, exact flavors and everything. And so I know that it's not just I'm changing, you know what I'm saying? And everything else is what is taking the blame. Like, I'm certain that I could come up with other examples besides just Whataburger.
There are lots of consistent places. Like, if you go to In-N-Out, you're pretty much getting the same experience no matter where you go. If you go to Five Guys, you get the same sort of experience. McDonald's, even, for as poopy as the food is, it's poopy across, like, it's just the same everywhere, right?
It tastes just as bad everywhere.
But for some reason Taco Bell and the new, I guess our example now is Denny's, but Taco Bell and Denny's are all over the map. It depends on the franchise, who owns it. Like, I always talk about that Vegas, or on my way to Vegas, Taco Bell we stop at in St. George is amazing. Yeah. It's so good. They give you the best combinations of everything. It's like the perfect televised commercial version of Taco Bell food. It's so good. And then the one over here by us here is just garbage. It's like eating a turd off a stick. It's so bad. So
I let their dog out, by the way.
I know, the poor puppy. I feel so bad about it. I'm
keep talking. She's in a chair and she thinks she can't get out herself, but she literally, keep talking.
I love it when a place that you go on occasion is differential from one location to another, but they're all generally good. So like a few weeks ago, we're at this air show. Jeez. And it's getting near the close, and we're talking to our friends. We're sitting on a beach. We're talking to our friends, like, where do you want to go eat? Hey, let's go to In-N-Out. And one of my friends says, okay, this is important. Which In-N-Out? And I'm like, I don't care. Hmm. But she has this like mental ranking of all the local In-N-Out burgers, and she wants to make sure we're going to a top tier In-N-Out. And I'm like, for me, they're really, really the same, but not for her. And I love that. I freaking love that. Mm. When you know which one is the good one. Yeah. And I guess all I'm saying is there isn't a good Denny's anymore. You never hear about somebody say, hey, let's drive extra 30 miles to go to the good Denny's.
Yeah, I don't think they exist anymore. I think you're right.
No.
It's unfortunate. I prefer Village Inn. Of the chains, that's the one I like better.
By the way, pretty soon Denver is getting In-N-Out Burger. Basically, it's going to be just south of Denver in Lone Tree, which is way far away. But we'll only have one In-N-Out Burger, so that will be the good In-N-Out Burger until we get multiple.
Yeah, another one, sure. We have about, I don't know, 9 or something up and down the valley now, and they're all, I can't tell the difference. They're all good. Mm. So I think you're in good hands. Those guys control that stuff pretty well.
Good.
And they actually train their employees and pay them well. Which is nice. Mm-hmm. All right. Who guesses grossest moment?
Oh, I'm going to guess. And I wrote this down because I thought it was hilarious that this would be the thing that grossed you out the most. William Cat sticking the eraser end of his pencil in his mouth.
That's good. That's good. That's
you know
good.
What? That's really good, but not quite the one. But
because that grosses me out. It's like,
yeah.
Don't put if you do any part of the pencil in your mouth, it's along the barrel of the pencil.
Right. You shouldn't do it at all.
You don't put the point in your mouth and you don't put the eraser end in your mouth.
Yeah. You really shouldn't do it at all because your pencil's just dirty. But also, the eraser end is the worst because A, that's gross. B, your eraser stops working right. It just doesn't work after that.
Exactly. It never recovers.
With your cat spit. Anyway. All right. Guesses?
No, that was my guess.
That was your guess. Nah. Any guesses? Any guesses?
I want to tell you about a gross thing in this movie. I don't think it actually caught Scott's attention.
Okay.
But when you go to a freaking pig farm and you jump into the pen, you are just jumping in like ankle deep into pig shit. It is not something that you should ever do.
Yeah.
And you may as well, when you want to get out, you may as well just leave your boots behind. You may as well just jump out of the boots as you jump back out of the pig pen.
Yeah.
That's just,
I felt like they were generally too chill around that whole zone.
I can't believe none of them depicted the smell. Yeah. Like none of them were like, woof. Yeah. They should have all been gagging and that would have been a lot more realistic.
Yeah. Plus if you split a pig open and bleed him out, that's not going to be.
Oh, like the whole,
You need equipment for all that.
I'm telling you, you can't just drain blood and throw it in a gas canister. There we go. Let's go.
Yeah. The movie really skipped the part where they string it up, right? And then,
yeah.
There's a weird mural though over there. That whole thing.
Yeah.
Very, very odd.
They even talked about it. They're like, I don't even know what this set is right now. We're walking in from a bunch of pig pictures.
It's kind of what's going on. There was even a shot where the camera panned around the side to where they were at, and my brain was like, what am I looking at? Oh, okay. That's the wall.
I'm trying to think of Scott's gross moment, and I can't tell if it makes him more uncomfortable or more grosses him out. And I think it was all the dirty pillow talk. I think maybe, you know, too many nipples.
No.
It was 70s, not a lot of bras, maybe. Man, I don't know.
Nipples are fine.
This movie has no bras whatsoever.
Yeah, no bras. The bra budget was
banned
blown.
From the set.
Yeah, no bras allowed. No, that didn't bother me at all. So now, since y'all got it wrong, here's the gross thing that grossed me. I'm surprised you didn't catch it. They're in the car, Travolta and RoboCop girl. And RoboCop girl starts to suck on Travolta's fingers. That's grossed me out. You know, not put Travolta's fingers in your freaking mouth is a rule everybody should abide by.
Yeah, you don't even like it when you put your fingers in your own mouth, let alone Nancy Allen putting his Saturday night fingers in his mouth.
Yeah.
But the idea of the fellatio that followed, that didn't bother you.
No, because there wasn't any. Like, you know why there wasn't any? Because all you got was talking. She wouldn't stop talking.
And I'm just going to just, are you just,
Billy. Oh, Billy, or whatever. Was his name not Billy? What was his name? Oh,
his name was Billy. His name was Billy.
Was he Billy?
Yeah, Billy. Right.
Oh, yeah. Billy.
Oh, I forgot about I forgot about her. I forgot about the thing they used to do a lot, and they've done it until recently. And that's when Carrie was in the store trying on lipstick. You know, just whoever just stick their lips on those samples of.
Oh
lipstick.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they don't really do that too much anymore.
No,
but
they don't.
Thing.
That's not a thing. Was it a thing?
You just, man. You used to have
the try the lipstick, you've bought it. Yeah. If you put that up on your face, it's yours now.
Yeah, they must have.
By the way,
the
mural is apparently still up.
Oh, wow.
It's in the middle of Los Angeles. If you draw like a triangle between like Huntington Park, downtown LA, and East LA, it's in the center of that triangle along the LA River. And it's just a Farmer John meatpacking plant where this mural has been up for decades. Mm. And I guess the mural is supposed to distract you from what's going on in there. Mm.
This is a happy place.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, the mural is still up and people still go. They still park like blocks away and walk over to have a look at it.
Really?
No slaughtering here. Nothing like that going on. Mm.
Has everybody seen the Klondike Morello Mortiz version of this movie? What's her name?
Chloe Grace Moretz.
That's her name. Have you guys seen that
I
one?
I have, yes.
Yeah? Is it good or what
it's good. It's funny because from what I hear, again, not having read the book, it's closer to the Brian De Palma Shine or Carrie than the book Carrie.
Okay.
The only one that's supposed to be really close to the book is the 2002 TV movie, which is also streaming on Amazon Prime. I hear it's bad except for the prom scene. So if you want to check it out, that part apparently is just great. Like I mentioned, it's of all three, it's the scariest of the prom scenes because Carrie's eyes roll in the back of her head and you just realize that she is completely out of control at this point. Like she's reached maximum overload and she's basically doing all of this unconsciously.
Mm. Okay. I kind of want to see both of these just to do some comparison.
Yeah, watch the entire Chloe Grace Morales version, and then watch just the the prom scene of the 2002 one.
Oh, and this one's set in, was this in Maine? Did they ever point that out? Because the other ones all say that the school is in, right. The school is in Maine. Did I emphasize Maine weird or something?
Maine.
Was this one in Maine?
I never heard it. And I was busy paying attention to the exteriors because it was shot in Santa Paula out in Ventura County.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it looks real SoCal. Like it looks so.
I never noticed because I was paying attention to the Psycho reuse of the Psycho music.
Yeah.
And also the Bates High School. I'm like, are we trying? Right. How much Psycho?
Well, Brian De Palma is such a massive fan of Alfred Hitchcock. He's gotten accused of being like ripping him off. Body Double is a great example of like Brian De Palma saying, all right, every Hitchcockism of the things I love, I'm going to put in one movie. Mm-hmm. Let's just get them all out of the way. And he does it all in Body Double.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Which actually is a pretty enjoyable film.
I don't think I've
early
seen it.
Melanie Griffith. And it's a guy, it's basically Rear Window with a guy who gets to stay in a house that his friend owns. He's house sitting for a friend on this Hollywood Hill. And he's got a telescope that points down at this other house where Melanie Griffith that's every familiar. Night dances seductively in front of the plate glass window, and he just watches her, and then he sees her get murdered, and you know, hilarity ensues.
Is basically. It pig blood in the newer one? Is it still pig? They just
yeah, there's still pig blood.
It's always pig blood.
It's always pig blood. It's always got to be pig blood.
All right.
Did you guys? There was the thing that was more Stephen King in this movie than anything to me was the girls throwing tampons and chanting "plug it up." That is always, it seems like, the most Stephen King bullying that always
okay,
happens.
So
it's always
some kind of chant. I felt like from the get-go, the first shot of this movie, I felt like Brian De Palma has never actually known a woman and has never like been in the presence of women. And just like, it was just like, this is some person's concept of what women are like who has no idea. Like, sure. That's all I got, that entire first scene. And it's like, there's no way if you're remaking this movie, you do it like that at all.
How does that in the Clarette's Flondo Matisse one? How does it go there? Does she have the same little fight?
That I don't remember.
Curious about that. I can't think of her damn name ever, so it's going to be fake.
It is a jumble of a name. Yeah. Chloe Grace Moretz.
I like
Chloe
her. Grace she got the kick ass and the whatnot. She's good.
Yeah, she had
a potty mouth in that movie. Anyway, should we do? You want to do some clips? I have some right here.
Oh, you have clips?
Yeah,
I bet there's a lot of yelling.
This whole movie, I was just like, I'll bet Scott's capturing this. Oh, I bet he captured that. Yeah.
One more note that I had that we'd never even talked about: the one moment that they decided to do high speed tuxedo shopping montage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird. Totally weird.
Yeah, it was. Just like, all right, we're doing some tuxedo shopping. Oh, this is pretty fun. High speed. Blah, 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 and then we never use that thing ever again.
Weird thing. It's like, okay, we went too long. We went too long in that scene. I'm not going to cut. I'm not cutting anything. Just speed the film up.
I get that he was trying to come up. You know, there's movies are always experimenting with how do we speed up time? You know, make it seem like time is passing with montages or whatever. And that was a really weird choice. And it didn't work. It annoyed me.
Nowadays, you would have captured a lot more of it and you would have done a hyperlapse with some like orchestral music, right? And maybe even some like fades to show people coming and going and so on.
Or quick cuts of you, you know.
Yeah, this is just an early version of that. I thought it was actually kind of cute because it made me think, yeah, man, is there anything more boring than some teenage boys out shopping? Like it's
right.
Like it was funny that they sped through it.
Took me completely out of it though. I recorded that. Yeah. We'll hear in a second.
So unnecessary. Okay.
One other thing too to say real quick, and I almost forgot. I might be wrong, but I think in the 70s it was okay if you punched a kid around, right? If you're a teacher.
Oh my, that was awesome.
Man.
Miss Collins like totally like
laying into these kids.
Oh, the teacher, yeah, right.
Yeah, and I don't mean the mom, but the teacher teachers and
Miss Collins. Yeah, Miss Collins.
Capital punishment, totally fine.
Man. Miss Collins was going to down on that girl.
Well, she deserved it.
She'd have been fired from that first slap when she
easily
slapped what's her name in the shower.
Nah, this
even.
Is the 70s. You could do that.
I guess
it really was. You really could. Like I remember my brother's 10 years older than me, and I remember his cohorts getting knocked around by coaches.
I mean, we used to get chalkboard erasers thrown at our heads. I mean, come on.
Really? I never.
Yeah,
that.
Never had a teacher throw chalk at you or a chalkboard eraser.
No.
Oh yeah.
No, I had
but that doesn't hurt. That's just like to
that doesn't hurt
you in attention.
Yeah.
No,
oh,
a little well,
oh, oh so they were just throwing it, look, the chalk is the part I was talking about. So you ever got hit in the head with some chalk?
No.
So
Mr. Castellano would throw the erasers out.
Look, I still lived in an area that I was in elementary school and we went to the museum and some of us were acting up and the teacher literally smacked us on the hand with a ruler.
Wow.
So, I mean,
I was thinking that they brought chalk to the museum just to throw.
We were still a little old school down this side of town.
I guess so. I'd never had a teacher do anything like physical, like getting all up in your face
or
anything.
Get physical.
I had a few verbal shout outs with somebody, but never anything like that. All right. Let's do these here things. Oh, also the smoking principles. That was the other thing. Is that you don't see that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
With a big old ashtray in their office, just smoldering. Jeez, right.
Dump that ashtray out every once in a while, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look here, Cassie. We can call you. I'm not comfortable with all this lady talk. We can just call you a cab, all right?
Yep. Also, I think it's
got a little blood on your shorts.
Correct.
We can admit a truth that's been true for the last 5 decades or however long. Stephen King hates religion. Just hates it. You can just tell. It just oozes.
Well, I don't think he necessarily hates it as much as he knows that it's a fear.
Well,
he likes to play on fears.
Yeah, and he likes to make horrible villains that hide behind religion as their thing. Like in The Mist.
Absolutely.
In The Mist, one of the greatest characters and most evil characters is the born-again lady that gets stuck in the convenience store with everybody. And she basically starts building a cult from within inside while The Mist is happening outside. And man, she could not die soon enough, that lady. But he's really good at it. He's really good at bringing that out. All right, clip time. Here it is. Let's start with this one. It's one of the first things that got said. I think this is RoboCop Lady.
You eat shit.
You eat shit. All right. Mm. Thank you.
By the way, RoboCop Lady was married to Brenda Palma for a few years after this.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They meet on the set here?
Is this where they must have, yeah. And then he put her in a lot of his films afterwards.
He looks like a thumb. Have you seen him lately?
He looks like a thumb.
Like a thumb or a toe, kind of?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, it's fine. Just whatever. here's creepy. Oh, this is the kid that we think's funny. Here you go.
Creepy Terry, creepy Terry.
Oh. It's even funnier when you just listen to the voice part.
Yes.
Oh my god. Play it again.
Yeah, it sounds like you got to understand they're outside in someone's front yard, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Cuz the sound, when you just isolate the sound, it sounds like they're in a band hall or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do we lose Randy?
I don't know.
No, he was finished.
Oh, I think he untwisted.
He just took his finger off the thing half a second too soon.
Pushed to talk.
That's
yeah.
What it was. It was pushed to disappear. Here's I don't want to play that one more time because I think it's funny.
Creepy, I think it's played again.
it's kind of comical at this point.
It is, yeah.
Like, I know. The bike had a basket, and inside the basket was a cat made of church bells.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Did anyone say, I bet to the little actor kid or to the nephew, they said, now just know when you do this scene.
They're all going to laugh at you.
Okay. Thanks, buddy.
I just want people to know, if you didn't watch this movie, that is from this movie.
Oh, yeah.
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 Scott keeps playing a clip of the mom from this movie.
Yeah.
That is not Adam Sandler.
In fact, this is her right here talking.
Spread the gospel of God's salvation through Christ's blood.
Gross. She's just gross. but then there's this. Oh, the music's bad.
Oh, but I kind of like.
No, you don't.
That one. That particular arrangement, I kind
of
like.
You picked the good piece of music to make fun of. Like this.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is something that I would play on my Halloween playlist on Thursday.
Okay, maybe. There's more to come. Trust me. I didn't just capture that, but I still think
there's crap as well.
On a range of crap to maybe okay. That one's sort of in the middle. here's more mom weirdness.
And God made Eve from the rib of Adam.
Yeah. That's the thing. How about this one?
Say it. I didn't sin, Mama.
First sin was intercourse. Say it.
And what was the second sin?
That's right.
I had to turn on the subtitles for that scene. I had no idea what they were saying.
Well, the first part, she just says, say it.
Say it.
I love that part.
Yeah, we had this cranked up to like 11 on our
Oh, oh yeah, God. The audio transfer on this was horrible. We had to have ours cranked up too. But then anytime there were the psycho violins, man, it was like
that we had to turn it down immediately. Yeah,
cool. Yes,
it was pretty bad. All right, here's what they stole from Psycho. Sped it up slightly, or they did, but
like tripled it or quadrupled it or something.
Yeah, but still, that's I mean, come on. We know what you're
By the way, about. Not a good way to treat your violin if you care about your violin.
No.
Don't do that.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that.
Horse hairs flying off. Terrible.
No, that is a violin, right? Wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know why I ever thought of that. I never thought of it as a violin, but it totally is one. Like all this time, even the psycho one.
Mm-hmm.
You guys just blew my mind. Yeah, I never thought of it as a violin. I don't know what I thought it was.
Like it's, you know, Norman Bates' knife is the sound.
Right.
That's the sound that Norman Bates' knife makes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Going through a shower curtain.
This teacher is a huge dick and kind of deserved to get electrocuted. So I have this clip right here.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Shut up, dude. Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, the whole staff at the school was pretty bad except for Miss Collins. And it was interesting.
She didn't deserve to die. That bugged me.
Yeah, but she was hearing it. She was, you know, Carrie was in her head. You know, she was like,
but Carrie thought she was laughing, but she wasn't. She was the only one there.
Yeah,
to support
her. She thought she tricked her into it. She just didn't realize how much Miss Collins was standing up for her.
It sucks. It's actually effective because it made me
not
mad at the filmmakers. It made me mad at the characters.
And you realized you was like, okay, yeah, she has to die. It's like, oh, okay, You know, the other ones I felt good revenge for, but at that point you're like, okay, yeah, Carrie has to die.
By the way, the only blood that looked half decent in this movie was the actual pig blood, because it was dark and goopy. All other horror movie blood is wrong in the 70s. It's all bright strawberry pink.
Too transparent or runny. Yeah,
it's bad.
It's got to be viscous. It's got to be somewhat transparent, but mostly opaque.
Yeah, it's got to be coagulating in some places. It's got to act like blood. We're better at that now.
Yeah.
Way better.
Thank you, Dexter.
Yeah, thanks, Dexter. You're the best.
Thank you, Dexter.
All right, I wrote, I don't know what this is.
This isn't over.
Oh, that's when she's all mad because of the high school thing. She got slapped. I kept thinking, my parents are going to sue you. And I'm like, oh, no, it's totally. The 70s. Yeah. You can totally punch a kid. It's fine. Here's Travolta laughing very annoyingly. All right, there's that.
I loved it, though.
And here's Travolta again saying a thing.
I'm hurrying away from you, you know that?
You know that? You know
I'm hurrying away from you.
I'm hurrying away from you, you know that?
Ugh.
Why you touch my hair?
That's all I can think about in this thing.
I work real hard on my hair. You got to touch it.
Here he is again.
Pain right in the ass.
Okay. Pain right in the ass. That's where he likes it. That's terrible. That's not what I meant. Sounded like that's what I meant. It's not what I meant.
Pain right in the ass.
All right, great. Never call me that.
I thought I told you never to call me that.
All right. Jeez.
Wow. You're really captured how he was just in a completely different movie throughout that entire scene.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. It's all on his own somewhere. You're right.
He was in the slow lane. That's what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Here's his zipper and an old Billy. Here you go.
Billy.
Oh, that sounded terrible.
I know.
What was wrong with his zipper?
Billy.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
It was like a fart.
I'm going to now assume it was a fart. From now on, it was a fart.
Now listen to it in the context of it's a fart.
Yeah, pretend here that Billy had too many beers. He's just all built up down there, and she goes down, and they hear this.
Billy.
And she still likes it.
That was really juicy.
Oh, Billy, zip that back up.
Billy, try do it again. Can you do it again? Can you do it again?
That's really gross. The thing that's gross got out the most is this conversation. All right. Here he goes full cable guy. Okay, so here's that.
Get her done, man. Get her done.
Get her done. That sounded like a girl, and I'm pretty sure it was John Travolta in the movie.
It was.
Or they VO'd it, and it's not him. I don't know.
Was his voice that high?
Get her done. Get her done, man. Get her done.
It is high.
Wow.
Oh, it's annoying, though. He's really annoying in this movie. Just putting it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's another great line from him, which is, you know, this is good advice for everybody, really, especially in the winter. Here you go.
Keep your tits on.
Okay.
Yeah. Keep true.
Tits on. I know you wanted to like take them off, but
keep them on.
Okay, then here's a big question. What teen girl knows what this is?
What's she gonna wear?
Will carry?
A sackcloth?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's what your average 15-16-year-old girls wear. Right. Sit around talking about sackcloth.
Hey, what's a sackcloth?
Yeah, what even is a sackcloth? I don't even know.
Like a gunny sack, right? Like a potato, burlap, potato.
Yeah,
potato
burlap. Sack. Is what we know what it is, but these kids wouldn't
I didn't know.
It.
I still don't really know. I'll take your word for it is what it is. But I'm like, come on, teenage kids. I don't care if it was the 70s. They didn't know that.
That's like I didn't know it, Mazet.
Like in the 30s. Oh, you got yourself a sackcloth.
Oh, sackcloth, yeah.
Yeah, see?
I still don't know what it is. What is it?
I don't either. Let's look it up. Sack cloth.
Hop into your potato sack.
Sack
and
cloth.
I don't
a
want
rough,
to know what a film that's sack
what,
cloth is.
That's what Nancy Allen was unzipping.
Oh, here it is. Here it is. Here's how it's pronounced. Hold on.
Sack cloth.
Okay. It is a...
Oh, thank goodness.
The definition is a coarse cloth of goat's or camel's hair. Or a flax, hemp, or cotton, a garment of sackcloth.
The hemp
cloth
one
worn
is the
a,
one I usually am familiar with. Modern
says it's right. It's worn or was worn traditionally as a sign of mourning or penance. So like
get in your prayer closet.
You could probably say that dude in Game of Thrones that was like the religious dude that was trying to take everything over and then ended up getting blown up.
Oh, the High
theater.
Sparrow.
Yeah, the High Sparrow. Yeah. You could say he was wearing sackcloth because he was like, Mr. Look at me. I'm of the earth. I'm
So that's more religious overtones then that the girls exactly. are kind of picking on Carrie about.
Yes.
That makes
less
sense.
About,
yeah.
Less about a poverty thing, more about, oh, she's got to wear a sackcloth.
Yeah.
Because that's what those crazy religious people do.
Yep. Sackcloth.
Yep. There you go. Thank you.
Sackcloth.
that was a good accent. You should do that more. I like that. All right. I already played this. It's just a cool 70s track while she's out getting her lipstick on. All right, here's an odd choice I wrote.
I don't have a tuxedo body.
I know they have tuxedos here for you.
I wouldn't look right in it.
Okay, but here's the thing. I understand you want to come up with a way to do the fast forward and the scribbly little voices and all that. Okay, cool. That's weird, but whatever. But at least make it a point that you got to another part of the conversation, and that's why you had to speed up. It was the exact same conversation. They were saying, I don't look good in a tux. Oh, you should get a tux. Oh, man, I don't look good in a tux. Well, what was the point of that?
Maybe that was their best take of that sequence, but someone like dropped a glass offset, and like there was no getting around it.
Yeah.
And so they just sped through the mistake because the actors kept going.
Maybe. Could have. Yeah.
I don't know. You basically cut to another shot of the person working at the tuxedo place holding up another tuxedo, and then you cut back to them continuing the same conversation.
Like, you are asking a lot of Brian De Palma. Like, that's a lot.
I'm not a filmmaker, but here's how I would do it.
Didn't he do 8mm, the Nick Cage one we always talk about? Is that him?
What was the other one? He did some Nick Cage movie. What was it?
Hold on. I'm going to find this.
Snake Eyes? That's what I'm thinking.
Snake Eyes. Yeah. We should see.
Yeah, Schumacher. Right. Schumacher was 8mm.
Oh, right. Okay. Did he put nipples on everybody when he made that movie?
He did.
Okay.
He did.
Well, most people already have nipples, Scott.
But that
and they were 8mm long.
Oh, okay.
And they were dirty pillows.
Long. You can tell we just watched a 70s movie because we're talking about nipples in length and not in circumference. So that's good. all right, here's that line I like.
I can see your dirty pillows.
Oh, she's the worst mom. She's a bad mom.
Your dirty pillows. It's a phrase we wouldn't hear until a few years ago with Austin Powers.
That's true. Hmm. Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I didn't even
spoken by Carrie's mom and Austin Powers.
Yeah, I gotta get this stuff together in my head. All right, here's the sound of pig blood. I think there maybe was more an endless pig blood in that bucket. Like went on forever.
Yeah. I hate they didn't get to. I kept going, well, how am I not notice that bucket up there? But then I was like, oh, I guess it was decorated like it was glitter and stuff. And I guess that's what was supposed to happen was the glitter and stuff was supposed to fall down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Instead, it was full of blood.
Instead, it was full of blood. And also, apparently, a very heavy bucket. A bucket heavy enough, even empty, to knock out William Catt.
Yeah.
Not only knock him out, but one of the sources that I read that was doing a body count said that his character was killed by the falling bucket.
Oh.
No, it was killed by the fire.
Exactly. I'm with you. It's just like, no, I don't consider that. Because he's clearly like, ow, and then he falls down and just lies there.
Dude. And then he's like, and I'm like, oh, was this the chick in the bucket? And I'm like, okay.
Right.
The dude in the bucket. Dude from the bucket. All right. Time for this. It's the Film Sack Checklist. Bits of William Catt's hair found all over the set and in the food for months. Check. Pig blood is not cool. Check. And finally, teacher should have been spared. I say check.
Yeah.
She was nice. Have her locked out with what's her name. That's fine. So she couldn't get in. Trek Connection, we got one here. This is it. Stefan Gurasach played Mr. Morton. That's the teacher, the weird teacher. On TNG, played Dr. Hal Mosley in the 5th season episode, A Matter of Time. So there's an actual Trek connection in this film, which is pretty cool. Soundtrack grade, I give it a U for uneven. I think the orchestral stuff at the end was good. I think the dancing bit was good. I mean, there are moments where I was like, oh, this music fits. And then there are other times.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to know more about that band that was playing the prom.
Yeah.
They were good.
Did they get out before the fire?
Surely they did. Yeah. They were all having a smoke break out behind the place.
Hopefully that's... I mean, the implication is the only survivor is Amy Irving, right?
By the way, was anyone else just taken aback by the idea of going into the principal's office and he and some teacher were smoking and there was a cigar or like a cigarette at ashtray right there on the desk and so on. Like that just kind of grabbed me. I couldn't stop thinking about
me
it.
Me too. I so much so I mentioned it about 20 minutes ago in the show.
Wait, there's a red on air light on that thing?
Yeah, there's a red light. Oh yeah, I did this the other day on TMS. I still get emails about that, by the way. Gosh dang
really?
It. Oh yeah. People think it's hilarious that I screwed that up. They think that's so freaking funny. It's like,
well,
all right.
You know, Scott, they're all going to laugh at you.
They're all going to laugh at me.
They're all going to laugh at you.
Yeah, sorry, what?
Just imagine, only 40 years ago, just imagine what the interior of all places smelled like. Like, except for Carrie's house. Carrie's house smelled like candles, apparently. Yeah. But everywhere, and by the way, I'll bet Carrie's house stank of candles.
Oh, yeah, because I'm sure, like... Yankee Candle Works is a place of the devil, and there's no way she'd ever shop there and buy anything.
I wonder why she was last showering. Do you think she waited till everybody else was done? Like, right. Why was she?
Oh, the place. Yeah. She's modest. Right.
Yeah, and she's okay with showers. So why wouldn't she take a shower with the pig's blood? Like, if you're gonna wash all the pig's blood off of you, you do that in the shower. You don't do that in the bath where you're just sitting in all the pig's blood.
Agreed.
You know, this is a really good thing that Stephen King did here. The horror of going through puberty and having to be undressed and your peers in showers and stuff has been a fear of, I think, every student ever who has ever went to school. Mm-hmm. So why do we still do it? Why can't we have like gym and last period where you can go home and you can do something about it later? Why?
Because it teaches you to be comfortable with your body and yourself.
Uh-huh.
But in front of what? Your peers while you're going through puberty? I can understand it when you're in your 20s. It's like, I'm comfortable when I'm in my 20s. But when you're changing and trying to understand it, that's
it's also cheaper.
She was supposed
that's
to
not
be
a time. She was that's not a time to try to get comfortable with yourself.
Yeah, but she was supposed to be a senior. And none of them, like, I understand late bloomers. It certainly happens. But
right.
I'm with Dunaway here. Don't shout. It's never, that was never good. No, it's not good now. It wasn't good then. Don't have us all in the same damn shower.
I'm especially with Dunaway on how you're supposed to pronounce the word horror.
Horror.
Like, horror.
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 I like that a lot.
I love it. I'm going to miss Sacktober for the next 10 months because we're not going to get to hear.
I'll bring it back.
Dunaway, yeah, we'll get some horror movies in here and there just so we can hear you say it.
This isn't, you know, we can watch horror movies.
horror.
The other 11 months of the year.
Yeah. We need more horror movies.
Get John Travolta in here.
Well, you got to watch a horror movie.
I need me to watch a horror.
Horror.
You can hear it either way, right? I could almost hear him say it either way.
That's starring in a horror movie.
All right.
Scott's version is more Andrew Dice Clay, which also worked perfectly.
Yeah. He should have been in this. All right. Here's a moment for you guys. You guys get to do 280 characters or less summation of this film as if you were to put it on Twitter. Let's start with Randy.
Carrie, we open on the inside of a place where naked women are just spilling out of the gang shower area into a Saturday night at Ibbot's house.
Yeah.
Aww.
I don't know if we end up there. You know, it's funny. This is the one episode where there's an actual prom where I didn't do any prom Ibbot things.
Oh, yeah, that's all right. Well, I did a prom intro, so that's all right.
Yeah, you're fine. It's all good. You did your fiduciary duty. They can't come after us for that.
True. Prom was represented.
There you go. Brian Dunaway.
Gary, I can see your dirty pillows and really way too much more than I care for. De Palma was weak. De Palma was weak. Say it.
He's the second sin. And then finally, Brian Ibbot.
I only needed like 18 characters for this one. Gary. Oh, this is a period piece.
It is.
Oh my gosh, that's a good one, though.
That was a good joke, eh?
No, that was really good. I feel like an idiot that that's not my alternative title today.
I was like crossing my fingers that nobody would use
make
that
it out
joke
of your
for
line.
The entirety of the show, so that my Twitter post would stand up.
Oh, that's big points in your scorecard. That was very good.
Oh, thanks.
All right, time for this now. Oops, wrong one here. Just handed this list of potential titles. It was almost called Bloodbath. Would have been better for period piece.
Mm.
Or Travolta in the Bucket. Got a couple emails to read here real quick at the end of today's show. This is sent to us at our email address, filmsack@gmail.com. Super easy to do. Go there and do it. filmsack@gmail.com. Danny wrote in. He's also known as the Trek-noid. Sounds like a accented version of Daryl's name. But anyway.
Avoid the Trek-noid.
He says, listening to Panic Room, best country musician turned actor, and no one comes up with Kris Kristofferson?
Oh, good point. Good point.
Yeah.
Is he a really good country musician or a really good actor? Because I'm finding...
I like him as an actor more than I do a musician. I think he's I think he's great fun to watch. I loved him in Blade and the Blade sequel.
Yeah, yeah.
He's fine, whatever. And then he says, best rapper turned actor, and no one says Will Smith? Good point.
We did, though. I'm sure we did.
No, we didn't say Will Smith. We should have, but we didn't.
I'm sure we did.
We were looking for... I mean, here's the thing.
Will Smith is a good. That is a good. That is one that we did not bring up.
Yeah, but Will Smith is so much more weighted on the actor side and so much less on the rapper side. The rapper side just feels like a blip in his history.
Well, that's where the... Yeah, but I don't know. It's according to what you were listening to back in the day. Like, I just heard Nightmare on My Street yesterday on the radio.
Yeah. Yeah. And I Think I Could Beat Mike Tyson was like song of the year among my little crowd, whatever year that came out.
I like Jiggy With It, and I like the Miami song.
I like that's much later on. That's after he was an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. But I like them.
Your Big Willie style. Yeah. We're talking back when he was the French Prince.
The French Press. You know what I'm talking about.
The French Press of Bel Air. Yeah. Making coffee all day and night. Crazy. All right. Finally.
Keurig, wait, Jazzy.
Some boys are making coffee in my neighborhood.
Right. Wow, we talked Keurig. A lot more about the Fresh Prince than I would have suspected after watching Carrie.
I don't want to let just that fly by. Randy just made a very good pun. What'd you call it? Keurig and the
Keurig, Jazzy Jeff, and the Fresh French Press.
Yeah, there. That's perfect. Well done. That might be tonight's title. We'll have to see. All right. Final email from Jeff Cox. What is this? COCHOSKY.
All the horror.
Kochotsky. I can't read it. Anyway, he says this. Hey, Sack Squad. I was just listening to the episode about Panic Room where I heard you guys go off and, I heard you guys go off on you about ramen. I don't know. I think he wrote that wrong.
Oh, yeah, ramen noodles. Yeah.
Yeah. He says, Brian Dunaway mentioned something about his roommate who would add mayonnaise to it. Now, you might think it's disgusting. But one of my all-time favorite noodle dishes comes with a packet of mayonnaise and mustard, and you add it to the noodles, and then you cook them. It is the most freaking delicious thing you'll ever find. He gave me a link to it. It's called Myojo Epechan Yakisoba.
You can get it on
Amazon. Yeah, has them, I guess. And he says, anyway, I just wanted to support the mayo users of the world, especially my wife, who dips her french fries in it. Keep mining these depths. I look forward to the next 10 years of FilmSack, Jeff.
I wonder if she's Canadian.
Maybe. She could be.
I never once saw Canadian eat french fries in mayo. And
oh, really?
I'm telling you, they eat so many french fries. It is like, it's unbelievable how many french fries are consumed in Canada.
Well, we do the french fries mixed with ketchup and then therefore the pink sauce. That's like a huge thing here. Mm-hmm. That a lot of other states are like, what the hell are you doing? So I guess in theory I dip them in mayo, but it's very heavily ketchup influenced mayo. You know, it's got a lot.
Yeah, my favorite thing is over at Wingstop. You get the french fries with their honey mustard, which is half mayo.
Oh, yeah, honey mustard.
It's delightful.
Oh.
Yeah.
Let's see. How much is
really
this stuff?
For wings.
One pack of... Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry.
Okay.
This ramen that you mix the mustard and the thing with, $47.95 for 5 packets. That's ridiculous.
Wait, I see one for $2.50 with $370 shipping.
Oh, where am I? Maybe it's because
you must be ordering the big pack. I'm just ordering one piece at a time.
Are you doing
47
it?
Crates.
Right, 47 crates of that stuff. Jeez.
Are you going to do it? Are you going to get one?
Yeah, I'm going to try one. I got to try one. Why wouldn't I try one?
Okay, here's
at my grocery store, $47 would get you the entire aisle. Like, you could buy every ramen package that they have at the store for $47.
Yeah, plus all the weird pickled stuff next to it. Like, you'd get all that whole row. You're right.
Oh, I didn't know you could pickle this.
Yes. That sounds really good to me right now, ramen.
You can pickle anything, Brian Dunaway.
That's true.
Can you pickle me?
I've
right
got nipples. Can you pickle me?
Yes. I'm saying yes.
It's true. You can pickle anything. Any known substance, pickleable. Anyway.
Pickable. That's pickable.
Our next film is a movie that did not do great at the box office or with critics, but always had me curious, and it's Tears of the Sun. Yes, that's right. Our post-Sacktober first film, Tears of the Sun, a movie made by none other than Antoine Fuqua, starring Bruce Willis in some sort of war movie.
War.
I always meant to
what
see
is
it.
What is that good for?
And absolutely nothing. Say it again. But here's the thing. This came after Training Day. Fuqua's got kind of a spotty deal going. Like, he's got a lot of cool movies, and then there's some real bummers in there. Apparently, this is one that is, there's some split. There's some people who think it's Razzie worthy, and there are people who think it's Oscar worthy. And so we're going to dive in and find out for ourselves. Tears of the Sun next week.
Sweet.
Ooh. Yeah, that'll be good. No, film set or Netflix, right?
Yeah, yeah,
two weeks.
Yeah. Two weeks. No show next week. We traditionally take a week off for the BlizzCon. Randy's very busy, of course, with it. Usually we're traveling for it as well. We're not this time, but still very busy. So no show next week. 1 week off until Tears of the Sun the following week, right here at FilmSack.
We'll kick off our 11th year of FilmSack.
Lord, that's insane. Wow. That's insane. Those are weird words you're saying out loud. I can't believe it. but thank you all for being here with us for this long run. I know there are many of you who have listened since day one, from Kroll to Carrie.
And I've only watched two movies.
Yeah. And I've only seen two of those films. I'm sure there's got to be a couple who have just gone all in on everything. There has to be.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I want to know those people. Or maybe I don't. Maybe they're freaky. Mm.
You don't want to know.
Well, I mean, the four of us have done it. So.
Yeah, Scott, you know me.
We're pretty freaky. Yeah. We're pretty freaky. We can get
pretty freaky.
Yeah. So anyway, it's been a wonderful 10 years. Can't wait for more. And there's another thing I was going to say. Oh, that's on Netflix. Tears of the Sun, Netflix. That's where you're watching it. We like to. People always are like, where is this? I'm like, well, you can search yourselves, but we'll go ahead and tell you, Netflix. That's going to do it. Assuming it stays there for 2 weeks. Sometimes we get hosed on that deal, but it should still be there as far as we know. FilmSack.com is our website. You can leave us an email at FilmSack@gmail.com. You can even follow us on Twitter @FilmSack. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Intercourse.
We'll see you next time. Well, the first sin. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Keep your tits on.